land was valuable. As farming methods improved, there was still less need for spare workers on the farm. Some people did what their fathers had been forbidden to do, sold their land and moved to the cities to look for work. Migration tore families apart. While new opportunities opened up, the old safety nets were becoming tattered as some state enterprises became obsolete. Meanwhile, conditions in factories are terrible. Badly paid employees work long shifts under conditions of dubious safety. A BBC reporter picked up the stories of Lee Chun Mei, who died in late 2001 at the end of a 16-hour shift. She was found by her co-workers, lying on the bathroom floor, blood oozing from her nose and mouth. Then there is Zhou Xianpin, whose feet melted after he touched a high-voltage wire in a paint factory. Is this the price of economic growth? Is it worth paying? Economists like Paul Krugman, Martin Wolf, and Jagdish Bhagwati have repeatedly tried to argue that Chinese sweatshops beat the alternatives. This isn't a popular view. After Martin Wolf's book, Why Globalization Works, was reviewed in The Guardian Weekly, the paper published an outraged letter from a reader who fantasized with glee about Wolf himself being forced to work in a sweatshop. This response is about as vicious as wishing that anyone who wears a Mao t-shirt be condemned to starvation, but less logical. Martin Wolf is correct to suggest that the sweatshops are better than the horrors that came before them, and a step on the road to something better. Mao's great leap forward was a leap into hell. Nor is it unfair or irrelevant to compare modern China with Mao's utopia. Countries that are rich or rapidly growing have embraced the basic lessons of economics we have learned in this book. Fight scarcity power and corruption. Correct externalities. Try to maximize information. Get the incentives right. Engage with other countries. And most of all, embrace markets, which do most of these jobs at the same time. Cameroon's poverty costs lives, because poverty kills, and it also robs people of their autonomy and ability to make meaningful choices about their own lives. India, which has done better than Cameroon, but fallen far behind China, remains so poor that 500,000 citizens are disfigured by leprosy, a disease that can be cured for the price of a beer. Meanwhile, communist China and the Soviet Union killed tens of millions, often through pure economic failure. Economics matters. The contrast between Cameroon, India, or Mao's China, and America, Britain, or Belgium could not be greater. In the end, economics is about people, something that economists have done a very bad job at explaining. And economic growth is about a better life for individuals. More choice, less fear, less toil and hardship. Like other economists, I believe that sweatshops are better than the alternatives, and without a doubt, better than starvation under the Great Leap Forward or in modern North Korea. But if I didn't also believe that they were a step to something better, I wouldn't be such an enthusiastic supporter of China's reforms. That is why I was very cheered by the latest news from China. The wealth hasn't been evenly spread, but it is slowly seeping inland from the Gold Coast of Shanghai and Shenzhen. The inland economy of China grew very strongly by 7.7% annually between 1978 and 1991. Between 1978 and 1995, two-thirds of China's provinces grew faster than any country elsewhere in the world. But most importantly, the people of China are feeling the difference. After years of paying low wages, because the supply of migrant labour from China seemed unlimited, factories on the Gold Coast are starting to run out of willing workers. Foreign-owned factories pay a bit more and enjoy easier recruitment and lower turnover. But wages will have to rise and conditions will have to improve, because inland China is catching up. In 2003, Yang Li did what many Chinese workers have done. She left home to work in a sweatshop in the Pearl River Delta. A month later, after working 13-hour shifts, she decided to go home and start her own business, a hair salon. Every day at the factory was just work, work, she says. My life here is comfortable. Yang Li's parents had to survive the Cultural Revolution. Her grandparents, the Great Leap Forward. Yang Li has real choices, and she lives in a country where those choices mean something for her quality of life. She tried factory work and decided it wasn't for her. Now she says that I can close the salon whenever I want. Economics is about Yang Li's choice.
The end. You've been listening to The Undercover Economist, exposing why the rich are rich, the poor are poor, and why you can never buy a decent used car by Tim Harford. Narrated by Robert Ian McKenzie and directed by Rob Grannis.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.